plain, that of which Jumbu Deep is the center island. So it's surrounded by other ring islands and ring oceans all the way out to the Lokaloka Mountains. So that's what's going to be described. In this chapter, there is a description of various islands, beginning with Palakshadvipa and the oceans that surround them. There is also a description of the location and dimensions of the mountain known as Lokaloka. The island of Palakshadvipa, which is twice as broad as Jumbu Deep, is surrounded by an ocean of salt water. The editors have made a mistake here. It should be an ocean of sugarcane juice. Jumbu Deep is surrounded by an ocean of salt water. Then there's the ring island of Palakshadvipa. Then there's an ocean of sugarcane juice. So it has, Palakshadvipa has salt water on one side and the inside, and sugarcane juice on the outside. So you can choose which ocean you want to go to during your vacation. The master of this island is Idma Jifa, one of the sons of Maharaj Priyavrata. The island is divided into seven regions, each with a mountain and a large river. The second island is called Shalmali Dvipa. It is surrounded by an ocean of liquor and is 3,200,000 miles wide, twice as wide as Palakshadvipa. The master of this island is Yajnabahu, one of the sons of Maharaj Priyavrata. Like Palakshadvipa, this island is also divided into seven regions, each with a mountain and a very large river. The inhabitants of this island worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of Chandraratma. The third island, which is surrounded by an ocean of clarified butter and is also divided into seven regions, is called Kushadvipa. Its master is Hiranyaketa, another son of Maharaj Priyavrata, and its inhabitants worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of Agni, the fire god. The width of this island is 6,400,000 miles, or in other words, twice the width of Shalmali Dvipa. The fourth island, Krauncha Dvipa, which is surrounded by an ocean of milk, is 12,800,000 miles wide and is also divided, like the others, into seven regions, each with a large mountain and a large river. The master of this island is Grihaprishta, another son of Maharaj Priyavrata. The inhabitants of this island worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of water. The fifth island, Shalakadvipa, which is 25,600,000 miles wide, is surrounded by an ocean of yogurt. Its master is Medhatiti, another son of Maharaj Priyavrata. It is also divided into seven regions, each with a large mountain and a large river. Its inhabitants worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of Vayu, or air. The sixth island, Pushkaradvipa, which is twice as wide as the previous island, is surrounded by an ocean of clear water. Its master is Vitihotra, another son of Maharaj Priyavrata. The island is divided in two by a large mountain named Manasotara. The inhabitants of this island worship Swayambhu, another feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Beyond Pushkaradvipa, there are two islands, one always lit by the sunshine, the other always dark. Between them is a mountain called Lokaloka. which is situated 1 billion miles from the edge of the universe. Lord Narayana, expanding his opulence, resides upon this mountain. The area beyond Lokaloka mountain is called Aloka Varsha. Loka means also people, population, and Aloka means no people, uninhabited. So when it's Loka Aloka, it's the mountain that divides the populated part from the unpopulated part. So Aloka Varsha means uninhabited Varsha. And beyond Aloka Varsha is the pure destination of persons who desire liberation. Vertically, the sun globe is situated just in the middle of the universe in Antariksha, the space between Bhurloka and Bhuvaloka, the distance between the sun and the circumference of Andagolaka, the globe of the universe, is estimated to be 25 koti yajanas, 2 billion miles. Because the sun enters the universe and divides the sky, it is known as Maratanda, and because it is produced from Hiranyagarbha, the body of the Mahatattva, it is also called Hiranyagarbha. So that's the summary of the chapter. So I'll just read the English for text 1. Translation, the great sage Shukadev Goswami said, hereafter I shall describe the dimensions, characteristics, and forms of the six islands, beginning with the island of Plaksha. Text 2. As Sumeru Mountain is surrounded by Jambudweep, Jambudweep is also surrounded by an ocean of salt water. The breadth of Jambudweep is 100,000 yojanas, that is to say, 800,000 miles. Breadth means diameter. And the breadth of the saltwater ocean is the same. As a moat around a fort is sometimes surrounded by garden-like forest, the saltwater ocean surrounding Jambudweep is itself surrounded by Plakshadweep. The breadth of Plakshadweep is twice that of the saltwater ocean, in other words, 200,000 yojanas, or 1,600 miles. 1,600,000 miles. On Plakshadweep there is a tree shining like gold and as tall as the jambu tree on Jambudweep. At its root is a fire with 7 flames. It is because this tree is a Plaksha tree that the island is called Plakshadweep. So Jambudweep is named after Jambu tree. Plakshadweep is named after a Plaksha tree, which is high as the Jambu tree and Jambudweep tree. And there's this flames at the bottom. Plakshadweep was governed by Idmajiha, one of the sons of Maharaj Priyabrata. He endowed the 7 islands with the name of his 7 sons, divided the islands among the sons, and then retired from active life to engage in devotional service of the Lord. Here, when it says islands here, it means the Varshas of Plakshadweep. He divided Plakshadweep into 7 regions and named each of them after his 7 sons. So now text 3 and 4, which has a purport is a text we're going to read today, which describes Plakshadweep. which okay. Now it's a long prose text, but I'll read through the Sanskrit once by myself. That's the text. Now the translation. The seven islands, Varishas, are named according to the names of those seven sons: Shiva, Yavasa, Subhadra, Shanta, Kshema, Amrita, and Abhaya. In those seven tracts of land there are seven mountains and seven rivers. The mountains are named Manikuta, Brajakuta, Indrasena, Jyotishman, Suparna, Hiranyashtiva, and Megamala. And the rivers are named Aruna, Nimna, Angirasi, Savitri, Suptabhata, Ritambara, and Satyambara. One can immediately be free from material contamination by touching or bathing in those rivers. And the four castes of people who live in Plakshadweep, the Hamsas, Patangas, Urdvayanas, and Satyangas, purify themselves in that way. The inhabitants of Plakshadweep live for 1,000 years. They are beautiful like demigods, and they also beget children like the demigods. By completely performing the ritualistic ceremonies mentioned in the Vedas and by worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead as represented by the sun god, they attain the sun, which is a heavenly planet. Now read the purport. According to general understanding, there are originally three deities: Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu, and Lord Shiva. And people with a poor fund of knowledge consider Lord Vishnu no better than Lord Brahma or Lord Shiva. This conclusion, however, is invalid. As stated in the Vedas, Ishtapurtam bahuda jayamanam vishvam vibharati bhuvanasya nabita deva evagnis tadvayus tad suryas tadu chandrama agni sarvadaivataha. This means that the Supreme Lord, who accepts and enjoys the results of Vedic ritualistic ceremonies, technically called Ishtapurta, who maintains the entire creation, who supplies the necessities of all living entities, eko bahunam yo vidadati kama, and who is the central point of all creation, is Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu expands as the demigods known as Agni, Vayu, Surya, and Chandra, who are simply parts and parcels of his body. Lord Krishna says in Srimad Bhagavad Gita 9:23, Ye pyanya devata bhakta yajante sarayanvita tepi mameva konteya yajavidi purvakam. Devotees who worship the demigods with firm faith also worship me also, but not according to regulative principles. In other words, if one worships the demigods but does not understand the relationship between the demigods and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his worship is irregular. Krishna also says in Bhagavad Gita 9:24, Ahammi sarvasyajnanam bhokta cha prabhurivacha. I am the only enjoyer of ritualistic ceremonies. It may be argued that the demigods are as important as Lord Vishnu because The names of the demigods are different names of Vishnu. This, however, is not a sound conclusion, for it is contradicted in the Vedic literatures. The Vedas declare, Chandrama manaso jatas chakshoho surya ajayata shrotadayas chapu pranas chamukha dognir ajayata Narayanat Brahma Narayanat Rudro Jayate Narayanat Prajapati Jayate Narayanat Indro Jayate Narayanat Ashto Vasavo Jayante Narayanat Ekadasha Rudra Jayante. The demigods, the demigod of the moon, Chandra, came from the mind of Narayan, and the sun god came from his eyes. The controlling deities of hearing and life air came from Narayana, and the controlling deity of fire was generated from his mouth. Prajapati, Lord Brahma, came from Narayana. Indra came from Narayana, and the 8 Vasus, the 11 expansions of Lord Shiva, and the 12 Adityas also came from Narayana. In the Smriti Vedic literature, it is also said, Brahma Shambhus Tatai Varakas Chandramas Chasatakrato Evam Adyas Tatai Vanye Yukta Vaishnavatejasa Jagat Karya Vasanetu Vijunchante Chatejasa Vitejascha Vitejascha Te Sarve Panchatvam Upayantite. Brahma, Shambhu, Surya, and Indra are merely products of the power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is also true of the many other demigods whose names are not mentioned here. When the cosmic manifestation is annihilated, the different expansions of Narayan's potencies will merge into Narayan. In other words, all these demigods will die. Their living force will be withdrawn, and they will merge into Narayan. Therefore, it should be concluded that Lord Vishnu, not Lord Brahma or Lord Shiva, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As a government officer is sometimes accepted as the entire government, although he is actually but a departmental manager. So the demigods, having achieved power of attorney from Vishnu, act on his behalf, although they are not as powerful as he. All the demigods must work under the orders of Vishnu. Therefore it is said, Ekale Ishvara Krishna Are Sabritya. The only master is Lord Krishna or Lord Vishnu, and all others are his obedient servants who act exactly according to his orders. The distinction between Lord Vishnu and the demigods is also expressed in Bhagavad Gita 9:25. Yajanti deva vritta devan yajanti mad yajinopi mam. Those who worship the demigods go to the planets of the demigods, whereas the worshippers of Lord Krishna and Lord Vishnu go to the planets in Vaikuntha. These are the statements of the Smriti. Therefore, the idea that Lord Vishnu is on the same level as the demigods is in contradiction to the Shastras. The demigods are not supreme. The supremacy of the demigods is dependent on the mercy of Lord Narayan, Vishnu, or Krishna. So in the purport, Prabhupada wants to discuss this matter, that we see in the summary that the residents of the 6 different islands surrounding Jambudvip worship the Lord in the form of different demigods. Here on Plakshadvip, they represent him, it says, Surya Atmanam. They represent the super soul represented by the sun god. So they're worshipping the sun god. But they are worshipping the sun god as a representative of the super soul, not as an entity independently powerful. So it's the correct understanding is a little difficult for some people, because as Prabhupada says, the names of the demigods are different names of Vishnu. So from that fact, that's true, that all the names of the demigods are names of Vishnu. So from that fact, one may say that, well, the demigods are as good as Vishnu. No, that's the wrong conclusion. And so Prabhupada brings forth scriptural evidence from Smriti and Shruti establish this. Smriti means the original Vedas, Shruti means the supplements. So he says here, so he starts off by saying that originally Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, they accepted three demigods. Now, if you say that Vishnu is no better than Lord Brahma or Lord Shiva, he says the conclusion is invalid, because they start with these, they're mentioned as three. Why did they start with these three? Because these three are the guna avatars. So they're very basic. They control mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance. So big domain. It's stated in Srimad Bhagavatam that in the beginning there is Lord Brahma and the Prajapatis. In the middle of the creation, there is Lord Vishnu and the saintly kings. And in the end, there is Lord Shiva and the atheists full of anger. So they're in charge of the creation, the maintenance, and destruction of creation. And at different times, they're a little more prominent, as according to what's taking place. So a very, very big form of one of the most basic functions out of the three modes of material nature. So originally it says there are three. I may have mentioned before, a lot of times in religious textbooks that are used in schools and colleges, they refer to these three as the Hindu Trinity. And you can know people are misinformed in this way. And nothing like, because of Christians, you know, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, unto them, nothing. It's just a crazy comparison. Just because they happen to be three, you know, doesn't make them a trinity. And in one place in India, they've dug up a statue, which is called the Trimurti. It's a single figure. One face is Vishnu, one face is Brahma, one face is Shiva. One statue. Nowhere else is this seen anywhere. So somewhere some Mayavadi had this thing carved, you know, it's a total concoction, this Trimurti. You don't find anything, any such form in any of the scriptures. So one form like this has been dug up, and you know, it's, you see it in all the textbooks to illustrate this Hindu Trinity idea. You know, there are three aspects of the same, you know, ineffable one. You know. So you know, this is the kind of prejudice you have to overcome. It's just there's no support for such a form in the texts. You know, it's just somebody's concoction, and somehow or other somebody found it. So that's how you can take something of it, so because it illustrates some preconceived idea. That's the picture they show on the textbooks. So then students, without knowing anything, they read about the Hindu Trinity, and then they see this picture of this Trimurti, and then they say, oh, well, there it is, this information. But here the texts are different. He quotes the Vedic literature, Smriti. Smriti means the original Vedas. Shruti. I'm sorry, he's quoting Shruti. I got them mixed up. Later on he quotes Smriti. Shruti means the original Vedas, this Ishtapurtam Bahuda Jayamanam Vishvam Bibharati. It doesn't say where it comes from, which are the Vedas. But he says, this means that the Supreme Lord, who accepts and enjoys the results of Vedic ritualistic ceremonies, who maintains the entire creation, who supplies the necessities of all living entities, and who is the central point of all creation, is Lord Vishnu, and that he expands himself as the demigods. So the difference is, Lord Vishnu is the absolute truth. He is the ultimate source of all energies. That's the difference. The other, Brahma and Shiva, are not the ultimate source of all energies. Lord Vishnu is. He is the one who accepts and enjoys the results of ritualistic ceremonies, maintains the creation, supplies the necessities, and is the center point. And he expands as all the demigods. Then Prabhupada quotes Gita, Bhagavad Gita, where it says, those who worship the demigods in faith, they worship me also. So you say, oh, well, there it is, you know. If you worship them, you also worship Krishna. But then he says, avidipurvakam. They worship me, avidipurvakam. Not according to regulative principles, in a wrong way. This phrase, avidhi, vidhi means law, regulation. Vidhi, like vidhi bhakti. And this is avidhi purvakam. It's in the wrong fashion. And this same phrase turns up later in the Bhagavad Gita, where the chapter Divine and Demoniac Natures, I forget the chapter number, where Krishna is describing the demons, he says, they perform sacrifice avidipurvakam. And he translates it there as, in name only. But it's the same phrase in Sanskrit, avidipurvakam. It's an unauthorized sacrifice. So here, in this way, Prabhupada gives us a clear understanding of what makes it unauthorized. What makes it avidhi? If one worships the demigods but does not understand the relation between the demigods and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his worship is irregular. That's another nice translation of avidhi purva. Irregular. They do so in an irregular way. So it's saying here, the demigods can be worshipped, but you have to understand the correct relationship between the demigods and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If you understand them as Prabhupada says later on, as stand-ins for Krishna, as endowed with Krishna's power of eternity, if you accept them as a government representative representing Krishna, then that worship of the demigods is not irregular. That's the correct understanding. And if you're worshiping them with that understanding, but still for some material goal, very quickly you'll come to Krishna consciousness. But one should understand, as he says, Ahammi sarvayajjanam bhuktam cha prabhureva cha. I am the only enjoyer of ritualistic ceremonies. Only enjoyer. So these oblations that are offered to the different demigods, they're receiving as representatives of Krishna. So even though they're allowed to stand in like that, be worshipped on his behalf, they'd never become equal to him. He says you can think so because their names are his names. All the names of the demigods are names of Krishna. That's where they get them from. But that doesn't make them equal. That doesn't make them equal at all. And here he quotes how they all come from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that one may do a Vedic ceremony, a yajna, in ignorance, or he may do it in knowledge. If he does it in ignorance, then he thinks he's worshipping all these different demigods who are separately empowered. But if he does it in knowledge, even though he's invoking the names of the demigods, he's worshipping Narayan only. Same mantras, same procedures, but if you do it in knowledge, then you worship Krishna alone. Then you understand what the meaning of this sacrifice. This has been explained by Prabhupada in the commentary of the Bhagavad Gita, that you can perform a sacrifice in ignorance or in knowledge. And if it's performed in knowledge, the same sacrifice leads to liberation. It's no longer karma kanda. It's no longer fruit of activity. Explained like that. So this is why, but this because it's a little subtle, because all the names of the demigods and names of Krishna, people then, because they become tinged with this Mayavad philosophy, then they think all the demigods, it's just as good to worship a demigod as to, they think that Krishna is on the same level. That's the mistake. They don't understand that the name Vishnu or Narayan or Krishna is unique. That is the name of the center point, the name of the one who is the source of all the others. All these other names of people, they derive from Krishna. But Krishna doesn't derive from anyone. And so therefore he quotes again from the Smriti literature how all these different demigods, he gives all the names, Brahma, Shambhu, and so on, Vaishnava Tejasa, they are products of the power of Vishnu. They are products of Vishnu's power. And he says that when the whole cosmic manifestation of is annihilated, all these others will merge into Narayan, but Narayan will not merge into anyone else. That's the difference. So you may see them all ranked up, and sometimes Vishnu is counted as one of the demigods because he performs this function of being in charge of the mode of goodness. Sort of a function that seems the same as that of Brahma or Lord Shiva. But in the end, Narayan alone remains, and all the others have been wound up into him. And then at the creation, again they're created, and different living entities take their assigned roles as Indra, Chandra, Surya, etc. Therefore, it should be concluded that Lord Vishnu, not Lord Brahma or Lord Shiva, is the supreme personality of Godhead. As a government official, officer, is sometimes accepted as the entire government, although he is actually but a departmental manager. So the demigods, having achieved power of eternity, from Vishnu, act on his behalf, although they are not as powerful as he. So that's, you can give somebody power of attorney. Say you're going on a trip and there's some, so you have to sign a mortgage. It's going to come up while you're away. So you create an instrument, a legal instrument called power of attorney, and it gives somebody the right to sign their name but on your behalf. When they say, sign their name, they're not committed, but you're committed because you've given them power of attorney. That's what it's called. So in this way, the demigods, they achieve power of attorney from Vishnu. They act on his behalf, although not as powerful as he. It's similar with spiritual master. People, somebody worships the spiritual master, is not as independent of Vishnu. Therefore, it's not idolatry. Idolatry means to take something that is not God and to worship it as God. thinking that this is also God. Something that's not God is God. The correct understanding, either Vedic demigod worship or worship of the spiritual master, is not idolatry, because they are worshipped or served as representatives of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but not as God. There's no confusion. That's Mayavad philosophy is idolatry, that says that it takes the living entity to be a jiva, the jiva to be God. That's idolatry. But if we understand that others have power of attorney, or departmental managers, that the power and the authority comes from Vishnu, then that's another thing. So he quotes Chaitanya Charitamrita, Ekale Ishvara Krishna Ara Sabha Britya. Krishna is the sole Ishvara. All others are Britya, servants. His obedient servants, he says here. He act exactly according to his order. So this is the way we should understand this. Or this. Then when we see here on these different islands how it is that they're worshipping Krishna, but through the name of Agni or the name of Vayu or the sun god, that's not it doesn't have to be demigod worship. It doesn't have to be karma kanda demigod worship. It can be by those who are at least enlightened worship of Krishna directly. But then at that point you might as well use the name of Krishna. That's what Krishna is telling us in the Bhagavad Gita. Okay, any comments or questions? Yes. Well, he says you're less intelligent, your mind is distorted by material desires. But still, it's better that you perform this ritualistic ceremony properly, because as part of the procedure of that ritualistic ceremony, you have to worship Krishna, Vishnu, as part of the procedure. In every single yajna, Krishna is being worshipped. So there's a tinge of devotional service that's there. And so gradually over the course of time, the sacrificial system is so designed that if you just do it and meditate on it and try to understand it and this tinge of bhakti, that gradually you'll come to the right conclusion. That's why the Vedic system is so nice. It takes karmis and gradually elevates them. Whereas now, their people are karmis, but they don't perform any sacrifice, so they don't go anywhere. They're not purified. It's bad karma, actually. That was the system. Of course, now who can perform these sacrifices? No one. The only authorized sacrifice is Sankirtan Yajna. And we just worship Krishna straight out. There's no, as Krishna's saying in the Bhagavad Gita, there's no need to be roundabout about the whole thing. Just come to and worship me directly. If you're worshiping these demigods, well, they're just my different bodily parts, my empowered representatives. What they give you is actually given by me. So you should just worship me directly. Yeah. I don't know what the Hebrew is, and I guess graven image means anything that's, you know, carved. But the reference to that is what they saw around them, the Jews. Ishtar, Baal, everybody was worshipping these different, it was demigod worship all over again. There was the thought that you couldn't represent the Supreme Lord in the form of an image because no one had seen him. Moses only saw his backside. That's what it says. He was on the mountain, right? And he caught his as he was going away. Didn't say he didn't have a form, just that no one had seen. And actually, what happened was that apparently in the Hebrew Bible, God is described many places as having form. It's just naturally assumed. But then what happened? Time before Jesus, there was the Greeks' culture was spread all over. Hellenistic culture was spread all over, and in Alexandria, 70 Hebrew scholars translated the five books of Moses, the Torah, into Greek. And when they did it, they made it much more impersonal than the original Hebrew was to comply with the Greek idea of, you know, that God must be disembodied. Kind of philosophical ideas. So it was originally I've been hear from authorities that God is understood as having form and everything in the Old Testament. And as far as a graven image, you should read. They also had something they carried around, a portable deity called the Ark of the Covenant. And you read the description of how it should be carved. It has to be made out of this wood. Everything has to be this big. This has to be like this. Very, very strict how this Ark of the Covenant is to be carved. And then once it was toppling over and some guys grabbed it to hold it up, dead on the spot. So in effect, it's a deity, even though it's not supposed to be a visual representative of what. Remember, the people forgot about the Ark of the Covenant. It's going, of course, Raiders of the Lost Ark, brother man. But that sounds a lot like a deity. So what he's saying is simply the same thing, that you shouldn't worship demigods. That's all, as far as I can see. And the fact is that they didn't know what God looked like they didn't know. But the worship of Krishna is not a graven image. It's not like that I've imagined what God would look like and then created some form out of my imagination. No, it's actually an incarnation of Krishna. It's none different from his statue or his picture. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So this is the middle of creation, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So generally speaking, it's more
than that. Yeah. Well, when it's not Kali Yuga anyway. The Prajapatis have pretty much done their work. They've created all the species. Never. It's very clearly stated by Srimad Bhagavatam. Akama sarva kama va moksha kama udara diti reina bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. That whatever is your situation, whether you have no desires, or whether you have all desires, full of all material desires, or you're desiring liberation, whatever the case may be, tivreina bhakti yogena, you should worship Narayan. It says tivra, Tivra Bhakti, with intense devotional service. So it's recommended to be done intensely. But anyway, in any case, it should definitely always be for Krishna. There's no need at all to worship the demigods for anything. Why bother if you can worship Krishna directly? The point is that those people who were already attached to the demigods because of being involved with great ritualistic ceremonies, so they can continue to do that and worship Krishna. But for those of us who are coming in from the outside, there's no reason to worship demigods. None whatsoever. Especially because Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, forget it. You know, just worship me. Besides, you don't have the facility to worship the demigods. You want to worry, like, you know, I see people sometimes, they have Ganesh, you know. You want to see what you have to do to actually worship Ganesh? You have to have Kusha grass. When's the last time you saw Kusha grass? You don't have what you need. For chanting the holy name, there are no hard and fast rules, but for all this different demigod worship, or Vedic sacrifices, there are lots of hard and fast rules, and if you do it improperly, then you don't get the result. Okay? Anything else? All right, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.